part of the conversation. Send us a WhatsApp message on +27 73 470 3520 or call us at +27 12 001 7679. Let your voice be heard. Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. From broadcast to baptism.
Well, good evening to you, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media, +27 73 470 3520. That is +27 73 470 3520. That's the number that you can use if you do want to talk to us. Every Tuesday, we do this thing of technology. We're just trying to keep up with the trends on what's happening in the technology space. And today, we're talking about the role of technology in the finance sector, right? It's an interesting one because, yeah, as a person who also studied in the finance world, yeah, this is going to be an interesting one for me. So really looking forward to this one. You can agree with me that it's safe to say that financial services are quite heavily influenced by technology. It's a sector that affects all of us, even if you do not want to actually acknowledge or even realize that the finance industry was and continues to be in the search of innovations that would simply allow it to be more efficient and tailor-made for people's needs and wants as well. To help us understand that, we are joined by Elder Njabulo Sandawana, who's going to be helping us understand that bit a little bit more. Evening, Elder.
Good evening. Good to be here.
Thank you so much. Thank you for taking your time to join us this evening. Really appreciate it. How's the year so far? We're going to the end of it.
Yeah, my year has been pretty interesting. I think I had a good run this year.
Oh, much okay. Better than. Ah, okay. Pray tell, one or two things, maybe without necessarily dropping bombs.
Well, I think the highlight of it was I was accepted into the Mandela Washington Fellowship.
Oh, nice.
So I was in the U.S. for 6 weeks.
Sure.
It was an intensive 6 weeks of learning. So I guess that was the highlight. I got to meet a lot of interesting and smart people. So I think that was pretty much of a great thing for
me. Fantastic. And the last stretch of the year, a lot of people are complaining about fatigue, getting tired a little bit. I don't know if you're experiencing the same.
Well, I think fatigue for me is more, it sort of doesn't accumulate. It's not accumulable.
Okay.
It's almost like on a day-to-day basis. So I have to kind of rub it off after every
every day.
So I don't think of it in those terms,
Okay. That's fair enough. Okay. You're talking about the role of technology in the finance sector, but before we get into that, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do as well?
Yes. My name is Njabulo Sandawana, and I've been a tech entrepreneur, I'd say, for the past maybe 7+ years. Started off with a data analytics startup, and I've worked with. I've also worked with a number of tech startups along my journey. Recently, I think I, more relevant to the subject, I worked as a business development for a startup called Cashlink, which is in the sort of fintech space. We had a core banking platform. I'm also currently serving as a business development lead at Panamax Capital, which is a microfinance, which is financed through technology. So I guess I also have a tech news blog where people can, check out the latest tech news.
Okay.
And some of my, I also share some of my opinion on technology through that. That is technews.co.zw. So that's me in a nutshell. Yes,
definitely. So you said technews.co.zw, is that the correct one?
Yes, that's the yeah,
Okay, got
that's
it.
the
Got it.
thing.
Definitely going to be checking it out as well. So thank you so much for that. Let's talk about then the, fintech, like you mentioned, cloud finance, in the finance space and all those sort of stuff. Maybe let's begin with a bit of background. When does these things start becoming so important?
Okay, I think we'd have to go back a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Back in the day, people relied on, physical, of course, but also checks and things like that to process financial transactions. As you can imagine, these things are often sometimes slow and cumbersome. So sometimes it entails, it had to entail, waiting long queues in banks, spending a lot of time balancing checkbooks and all of that. The idea of transferring money instantly or managing investments, from a smartphone was that time, I'm talking about maybe the in the 20th century was, like a distant dream. But then, when we got towards the late 20th century, you started getting, things like, your ATMs, which is revolutionized the way people access cash, could withdraw your cash without having to step into a bank. So these are some of the early sort of fintech or financial technologies that was. And then obviously later on, there are so many others that kind of culminated towards that. But and later on in the in the 2000s, you then had this sort of wave of technologies in the finance space, fueled by the dot-com boom, the internet boom, and all of that. And then we saw things like PayPal, which allowed you to do peer-to-peer payments and so forth. Now, you have your Venmo and so forth. So it has been a a process, since, but the main thing being to improve convenience to people, in this area of finance.
And just on that one, before we get into how I suppose, technology is used in the financial sector, I'm listening to you and I'm thinking to myself, the way technology is purported to be changing, we are told it's changing rapidly, it's changing on almost every other day. There's new things that are coming to the market, and there's new technologies that allow further development and all that. But listening to the journey, it seems like it has been a long journey to get to be where we are, but it seems like we are changing rapidly. Is that a correct characterization of the evolution?
Yes. So yeah, I think it kind of sort of sums it up. But I think, but you know, I think as we get, technology is even, kind of improving since we started. So it has been a gradual move. But I think as we, especially after the sort of the dot-com era, the invention of the internet, things have been going much, much faster.
Much faster. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, how is then technology used in the finance sector? Any examples there?
So, in terms of finance, we obviously have, things like that I was just talking about, your VNMOs, that sort of allow you to do peer-to-peer payments, and you also have digital wallets that allow people to store money and send money to others. And then in the more sort of investment advisory side, you have, these robots that help you make better investments. We also have, now blockchain technology. So yeah, so I think there's a lot of tools that people use, even personal financial tools that people use to kind of manage their finances. I actually have a colleague and a friend of mine who's developing something, along those lines that essentially is empowering Africans to manage their finances better. Something you see in the first world, but not so much on this side of the world. But I think I'm definitely looking forward to the launching of that app. But yeah, so those are some of the tools that I think are available in this sort of financial space that people are taking advantage of.
Do you think we are tracking behind the rest of the world, particularly in the finance sector, in terms of the innovations that we are coming up with and, making banking better for people? There are advanced stuff in the rest of the world?
Yes. So, I do think that there's been there's a bit of, a lag when it comes to the adoption of these things. But I also think it's also kind of, an interesting balance, because we also have things like mobile money or M-Pesa and EcoCash in Zimbabwe that pretty much everyone uses, right? It really caters for that audience that is unbanked, and virtually everyone uses that. And these brands are so have done a great job that now EcoCash is kind of synonymous with mobile money. I think there's a sense in which we still have a lot to do, particularly on the institutional side, I think. But I think we're making those strides.
You're making those strides, all right. And then in terms of the finance function itself, I suppose we are seeing improvements because of technology. And I'm thinking, like you said earlier, now we don't need to really write checks, there's apps and stuff like that also businesses use to pay and transfer salaries and all those. So no need to write 1,000 checks for 1,000 employees anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of those processes have been, automated. I think that's the sort of the shift that has happened. Like I mentioned in the beginning, instead of doing your kind of manual process, you now have everything kind of streamlined, which obviously reduces a lot of costs and also helps to increase transparency in some sense. And then it allows people to actually focus on their core business. So instead of someone kind of being stuck in this routine tasks, and it kind of helps. But I think overall also, you have organizations now have kind of real time analytics.
Yes, yes.
To help them make more informed decisions,
yes.
much quickly than they would in sort of a non-technological context.
And I still want to get into that because things like AI, I suppose, are getting into the finance space and making things a little bit better. Predictive analytics that banks can use and finance, institutions, not just banking, I suppose, even insurance and all that can do that. But I want to come back to that one in just a moment from now. It's growing, and it seems to be growing quite massively. But like anything else, there's always good, there's always bad. There's always bad, there's always good with these type of things as well. Are there any concerns around regulating fintech that maybe you can think of or share as well? And how do we even regulate those concerns if there are?
Like you rightly, stated, I think there's a fear that, this kind of pace of change can outstrip the sort of regulatory frameworks. It leads to a lot of, kind of potential risks. Just to kind of mention a few here, you have things like fraud or kind of other systematic failures. And there's also concerns on the consumer side around data privacy. Cybersecurity threats and even the possibility of sort of market monopolies. But I think, it's obviously important to strike the balance between, kind of welcoming and fostering this innovation, and also ensuring, you know, safety on that. But but you know, I think there's all sorts of ways that this space is being regulated. So yeah, to kind of protect consumers' information and also to kind of you know, open up the space for innovation.
Yeah.
But there's certainly more work to be done.
Yeah.
As you know, financial technologies become more rampant and we're seeing more of them.
So, yeah. In my mind, I'm thinking it's one role for government to play in terms of regulation and put up laws enabling, I suppose, privacy and all that. Are there concerns, maybe not even just concerns, but also ways in which I, as an individual who is interacting with this fintech of sort, can protect myself?
Yeah, I think you know, like when it comes to these products, right? There's always so you know, speaking about my blog, I was actually writing about you know, some cybersecurity tips for people that are online just a couple of days. And I think one of the things that, you know, this is kind of sort of obvious things that, you know, we sometimes overlook, like, you know, sharing your passwords to these platforms or wallets that you have. And also, you know, just making sure that kind of that level of security is catered for, you know, putting passwords, also authentications and so forth, and also just making sure that you don't share that data that you have, and also being very mindful of the kind of information that you share, even with the actual platform that you're interacting with. I would say is and people should also watch out for scammers that you know.
Yeah,
would sort of solicit them for funds or and this kind of very rampant with this kind of technology. So, yeah, so those are the things that I would say people should kind of be on the lookout for.
I saw that banks nowadays are putting this facial recognition thing as well when you access the app and all that. Are we not inadvertently or unintendedly creating some or other problems? Because, for example, I think passwords are being phased out in a way because maybe people can, you know, copy your password when you are not looking in a taxi or in some public place and all that, thinking that you've hidden. And sometimes we forget to hide our passwords and everything. So they can be stolen in one way or another. But no one can steal your face. But are we not making ourselves a little bit at risk here? Because if you use your thumb, people will want to get your thumb, for example.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think, you know, biometric, that sort of biometric layer, I think is, you know, is very important. Because like you're saying, with passwords, you know, it's kind of easily manipulatable. But if you have that sort of biometric security, it means that you have that kind of, you know, no one else has that kind of unique identifier except you.
Yeah.
So it kind of improves security significantly. But in terms of the risks with that, you know, I mean, it's possible that someone can cut off your finger and kind of use this, but yeah, but you know, I don't know. It's kind of hard to predict this, but but you know, I think it would be, if someone has access to your finger, I think it would be more work for them to cut it off than just to put it on whatever on whatever device that they want to unlock. But but definitely that sort of biometric security is an important
one,
security. I think it improves security overall. Yeah.
Definitely, I agree. And just not to belabor this one, but I want to just move on to the next one. But it seems like there are some African countries that are seemingly leading the pack in these type of things, right? I'm thinking about Kenya, with their new ways of payments, and you mentioned they're unbanked as well, within the African continent as well. Are you also seeing the same, that there's countries that are leading in this space?
Yes, definitely. I think if we were talking about the African context, then you have the big four, right? You have your South Africa, your Kenya, your Nigeria, and in terms of, funding, VC funding in this particular, those are the prime sort of destinations for venture capital. There's all sorts of, ideas of why that is. Maybe it's because of Nigeria. People often say it's the population that kind of attracts that kind of. But I think that's beside the point. But I think that there's definitely countries that are more inviting towards innovation, and the region is much more in favor of that. So I think those are the kind of things that attract people that, founders and people that are building these kinds of technologies. You want to build a startup in a place that is, supportive towards startups. So I'd say if any government or if any country or if any organization wants to maintain that edge, then that's just one of the things that is important to do to kind of foster that environment where startups can grow and can implement some of these things. So you'll find out there's a stark contract between these countries that are sort of ahead and that are not. And sometimes it's a matter of that kind of regulation and the sort of environment that is available. So
I mean, the banking sector is, as you mentioned, perhaps one of those sectors where, because of the sensitivity around people's money, they constantly have to stay ahead of the trends. They constantly have to innovate and all that. And you spoke about how VCs, for example, are also keen on such things as well. Funding from government in this space, how important is it?
Well, I think government should be, so the misconception is that this is my view, that the misconception is that government is supposed to just play kind of a neutral role when it comes to this thing.
Yeah.
Kind of let the private sector do what it wants to do. But
I
think that is not very practical, as you see in places like China and the US, where, when it comes to DARPA in the US, it has essentially been behind almost, lot of technology. And this is a government entity that has helped, or the Science Foundation, I think, funded Google's, was the first to fund Google, something like that. But the point being, government should be also involved in supporting innovation, not just creating the environment, but also playing the role of an investor in some of these kind of initiatives. So I think that's my that's my thinking around that. Yeah,
that's an interesting thought, because I know there are people who would say no, government is supposed to just create an enabling environment through regulations or whatever. But if government now starts getting into investment and taking active participation, perhaps there could be, I don't know, a conflict of interest, or they might be seen to be supporting this company and not that other company. But to an extent,
maybe just to kind of interject, I think the sort of a case in point would be if you think about it, like, the private sector, sometimes the incentive is kind of to make money, right?
Yeah.
There isn't a lot of, especially, with bigger organizations, there isn't a lot of experimentation that goes on.
Yeah.
And I think that's the gap that government can essentially fill in terms of research and these kind of experimental, but innovative sort of ideas and projects. So I think that gap government can fill very well. The private sector might not necessarily have any incentive to do that. I think, as we have seen, so I think that's the sort of lacking ingredient there.
Okay, love it, love it. Let's end then with where the future then, I suppose, of technology in the finance space. What are you seeing? What are some of the things that are becoming important that you're seeing?
So I think, you know, as the world becomes more, you know, as we live in a more globalized world, I think there's been a lot of push towards some kind of universal digital currency, you know, and there's also, you know, a lot of interest around cryptocurrencies, particularly Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And I think there's been, you know, an interesting move that I think was made by BlackRock, which is, you know, one of the largest asset holders in the world. And they have essentially seen the promise of Bitcoin and so there's been a significant shift in their offering towards recognizing digital assets as a legitimate part of investment portfolio. So I think this not only validates, you know, the cryptocurrency market, but also encourages institutional adoption. So I do think that in our lifetime we will witness that kind of that kind of shift from, you know, this kind of cryptocurrencies or even a sort of universal digital currency. I think there's a good case to make for that, and we'll probably see it in our lifetime.
Ooh, that's interesting. And lastly, how do we then prepare ourselves for those future changes and things that are coming up, particularly because they have to do with our money? So we're very, very cautious about money.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to speak like as a continent. I think we should be very much involved in not only, you know, I think we should kind of move from this sort of spectator mode to a more dynamic mode where we're actually involved in the creation of these things. Because as it often happens, you find out we're left out whenever like a major technology is, or we just merely adopt whatever is produced elsewhere. In the West or in the East, ChatGPT is sort of a case in point, right? It kind of is good in speaking other languages, but not so much in like African languages. So those kinds of things, I think, we should be conscious of. So, the way to, you know, to be ready for that future is to also take part in building it. Yeah, but I'm going to make, you know, I was trying to think of the step, but, you know, it kind of slipped my mind earlier on in terms of how fast things are moving.
Yeah.
So from the agricultural revolution to industrial, it took us about 8,000 years. And then from industrial to the light bulb, that was 120. And then from the light bulb to the moon, it was 90 years. And then from the moon to the web, 22.
Sure.
And from the web to DNA sequencing, it was 9 years. So you can see, like, from this state that you actually have, you know, technology is being developed much rapidly.
Yeah.
So it takes us less time now because of all the other sort of underlying achievements that enables technology to move fast. So I just thought I should throw that in there.
Sure. That's just not something small you threw in there. That's literally a bomb. And it underscores the point that we are making a little bit earlier on there. But thank you so much, my brother. How can people make use of your services? Where do they find you?
So people can reach out to me on LinkedIn. Jabulo Sandawana.
Yeah.
That's the handle. LinkedIn. I'm also on Twitter at Sandawana_N. That's my Twitter handle, but they can also check out Tech News and interact with pages, Panama's Capital. That's essentially how to get in touch with me.
Definitely. Thank you so much, my brother. Really appreciate your time.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you so much. Sure. What a beautiful conversation there that we were having, talking about the role of technology in the finance space. I did tell you that the trajectory we are taking and around technology and what we talk about technology, you know, these last few weeks is one that I think is really, really interesting. But yeah, it's about time that Africa is not just a spectator, as it were, sitting behind the curtain. We need to move the curtain, tear the curtain if we have to, and throw it very far where the sun doesn't shine so that it never comes back. Because we can't be spectators when the world is moving a certain direction and we get left behind. We want to be at the forefront of it. I agree with him.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.